Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om
namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This morning we're hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. What is the number, please?
37.
Chapter 37. Entitled The Killing of Keshi and Vyoma. I will read the introduction and the first few verses. Chapter 37. This chapter describes the killing of the horse demon, Keshi, Narada's glorification of Lord Krishna's future pastimes, and Krishna's killing of Vyomasura. On Kamsa's order, the Keshi demon assumed the form of a huge horse and went to Braja. As he approached, his loud neighing terrified all the inhabitants, and they began looking for Sri Krishna. When he saw the demon, Krishna came forward and challenged him to come near. Keshi charged Krishna and tried to strike him with his front legs, but the Lord seized them, whirled the demon around several times, and then threw him a distance of 100 bow lengths. Keshi remained unconscious for some time. When the demon regained consciousness, he furiously charged Krishna again, his mouth agape. The Lord then thrust his left arm into the horse demon's mouth, and as Keshi tried to bite the arm, it felt like a red-hot iron rod. Krishna's arm expanded more and more, finally choking the demon, and in extreme agony, Keshi gave up his life. Lord Krishna then removed his arm. He stood calmly, showing no pride at having killed the demon, as the demigod showered down flowers from the sky and glorified the Lord with prayers. Soon thereafter, Narada Muni, the great sage among the demigods, approached Krishna and prayed to him in various ways, glorifying the Lord's future pastimes. Then Narada paid his obeisances and departed. One day, while tending the cows, Krishna, Balaram, and the cowherd boys became engrossed in playing hide-and-go-seek. Some of the boys took the role of sheep, some the role of thieves, and others shepherds. The shepherds would search for the sheep when the thieves stole them. Taking advantage of this game, a demon named Vyoma, sent by Kamsa, dressed himself like a cowherd boy and joined the band of thieves. He abducted a few cowherd boys at a time and threw them into a mountain cave, keeping them there by blocking the entrance with a boulder. Gradually, Vyomasura abducted all but four or five cowherd boys. When Krishna saw what the demon was doing, he ran after him, grabbed him, and killed him, just as one would kill a sacrificial animal. So we're doing text 1 to 9. I'll read the first 8. If you would like to read along, as is the custom, please. Okay, text 1 and 2. Sri Suka Uvacha Keshi Tukamsa Praita Burair Mahim Maha hayo nirjarayan manojava satava dutabra vimana sankulam kurvanna bhoheshita bishita kila tam trashayan tam bhagavan svagokulam tadeshitar vala vigunitam buddham atmanam ajo murgayantam agranir upahivat Savyanadan Nirgendravat. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, The demon Keshi, sent by Kamsa, appeared in Vraja as a great horse. Running with the speed of the mind, he tore up the earth with his hooves. The hairs of his mane scattered the clouds, and the demigods' airplanes throughout the sky, and he terrified everyone present with his loud neighing. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw how the demon was frightening his village of Gokula by neighing terribly and shaking the clouds with his tail, the Lord came forward to meet him. Keshi was searching for Krishna to fight, so when the Lord stood before him and challenged him to approach, the horse responded by roaring like a lion. Text 3. Satam nishambya mikomokina kam bivan iva baya dravad achyamashana jagana pad vyamara vindalochanam durasadash chanda javodaratyaya. Translation. Seeing the Lord standing before him, Keshi ran towards him in extreme rage, his mouth gaping as if to swallow up the sky. Rushing with furious speed, the unconquerable and unapproachable horse demon tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord with his two front legs. Tadvanchayit vatam adoksa jorusha prakriya dorbyam parividya padayoa sadvagyam utrichya danu satantare yatoragam taksya satubhya vashtita. Translation. But the transcendental Lord dodged Keshi's blow and then with his arms angrily seized the demon by the legs, whirled him around in the air and contemptuously threw him the distance of 100 bow lengths, just as Garuda might throw a snake. Lord Krishna then stood there. Salabhya samgya puna utito rusha vyadaya keshi tarasa patadarim sopyasya vaktre bujam uttaram smayan praveshayam ashayatora gambile. Translation. Upon regaining consciousness, Keshi angrily got up, opened his mouth wide, and again rushed to attack Lord Krishna. But the Lord just smiled and thrust his left arm into the horse's mouth as easily as one would make a snake enter a hole in the ground. Danta nipetur bhagavad bujas prishash te keshinas taptamayas prishoyata bahushchata deha kato mahatmano yatamaya samvavride upekshita. Translation. Keshi's teeth immediately fell out when they touched the Supreme Lord's arm, which to the demon felt as hot as a molten iron. Within Keshi's body, the Supreme Personality's arm then expanded greatly, like a diseased stomach swelling because of neglect. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that although Lord Krishna's arm is more tender and cooling than a blue lotus, to Keshi it felt extremely hot, as if made of lightning bolts. Text 7. Sameja manena sakrishna bahuna nirudavayush charanamsya vikshipan prashvina gatra parivritta Talochana papatalandam visvijankritao vasu. Translation. As Lord Krishna's expanding arm completely blocked Keshi's breathing, his legs kicked convulsively, his body became covered with sweat, and his eyes rolled around. The demon then passed stool and fell on the ground, dead. Jai! We don't care anymore whether the demons are being killed. Jai! Text 8. Dadehatat ka katika palopamad
Vasur apitrishya bhuja mahabhuja avishmito yatna hatari kasurai prasuna vashaya rishabir idita.
Translation. The mighty armed Krishna withdrew his arm from Kesi's body, which now appeared like a long karkatika fruit. Without the least display of pride at having so effortlessly killed his enemy, the Lord accepted the demigod's worship in the form of flowers rained down from above. Text 9, please repeat. Devashir upasangamya.
Devashir upasangamya.
Bhagavata pravaronipa. Krishnam akrishta karmanam. Rahasyetad abhashata. Devashir upasangamya. Bhagavata pravaronipa. Krishnam akrishta karmanam. Rahasyetad abhashata. Please chant. Devashir upasangamya. Bhagavata pravaronipa. Krishnam aklishta karmanam. Rahasyetad abhashata. Devashir upasangamya. Bhagavata pravaronipa. Krishna makrishta karmanam. Rahasyeta dabhashata. Ladies. Devashir upasangamya. Bhagavata pravaronipa. Krishna makrishta karmanam. Rahasyeta dabhashata. Deva Rishi. The sage among the demigods. Narada Muni, upasangamya, approaching, Bhagavata, of devotees of the Lord, Pravara, the most exalted, Nripa, O King Parikshit, Krishnam, Lord Krishna, Aklishta, without trouble, Karmanam, whose activities, Rahasi, in privacy, Etat, this, Abhashata, said. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. My dear King, thereafter Lord Krishna was approached in a solitary place by the great sage among the demigods, Narada Muni. That most exalted devotee spoke as follows to the Lord, who effortlessly performs his pastimes. Please repeat. My dear King.
My dear King.
Thereafter, Lord Krishna,
was approached in
his
solitary place
by the great sage among the demigods, Narada Muni. That most exalted devotee spoke as follows to the Lord, who effortlessly performs his pastimes. Purport. After speaking with Kamsa, Narada went to see Lord Krishna. The Lord's Vrindavan pastimes were nearly completed, and Narada wanted to see those he would enact in Mathura. Om Agyanata Marandasya Ginandana Shlakaya Chakshur Anmilitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Hare Krishna. Why do I feel so nervous? I can't imagine how many impious activities you must have performed to have to listen to me. But so be it. We're hearing now about killing of another demon, Keshi horse, and this last verse, Narada Muni, is thinking about Krishna's next course of pastimes, which is going to be in Mathura. So we know in the spiritual world that there is Vrindavan. There are three places of Krishna's pastimes, eternal pastimes. There is Vrindavan, there is Mathura, and there is Dwarka. And Krishna goes from one to the other, and these pastimes are eternally being enacted by Supreme Lord. So when we heard of Keshi's death, actually someplace in the material world, Keshi is being slain at this moment, isn't it? These are eternal pastimes, they are going on eternally. So, yes, so Krishna displays himself in these three places, and when he comes to earth, he comes in his internal potency to the places of the same name, Dwarka, Mathura, Vrindavan, and it's described that in Vrindavan, Krishna manifests himself most completely. It is also said that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So we understand the philosophy is that when Krishna comes, that he comes with all his expansions within himself. So in that sense, when he performs his pastimes outside Vrindavan, they're being performed not by him but by his expansion of Vasudeva. So these activities go on in the spiritual world eternally, and also in this material world they are going on continuously. So the spiritual world exists, and we want to go there. Hopefully we want to go there, not to California or to some other place, but we want to go. But is it so easy to get there? It's described that even if we travel, if a materialistic person travels at the speed of the mind, how long will it take him to get to Goloka Vrindavan? Will it be one hour, one day, one week? How long will it take? Does anybody know? At the speed of the mind. Instantly, at the speed of the mind, for a materialistic person. Huh? Well, it's, I don't know the Sanskrit, but it's millions of years. Millions of years. One would have to travel at the speed of the mind. We know how fast the mind is because some of you have recently been in India, so you can immediately think on my instigation that you will, I ask you to remember where you were. You can put yourself immediately at the altar, Krishna Balaram temple. Right now, you can do that. That is the speed of the mind. So you could travel like that for millions of years, and still Goloka Vrindavan would be inconceivable. You would not find it. So that is a monumental feat of frustration, wouldn't it be? Anybody who is approaching MCI, mild cognitive impairment, will appreciate how frustrating that might be. You know, when you find yourself looking for your glasses and you're actually wearing them, or you're getting into the habit of mislaying things, how frustrating it is. So that's what it's like if you want to try and understand the spiritual world from the mundane platform, that it will be that difficult. So this killing of Keshi demon, we understand that the killing of these demons represents the killing of demoniac tendencies. I have a book here, someone brought it in today. And it's describing, I think this is a compilation from the writings Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, how each demon represents certain demoniac tendencies. And it says in this book, page 54, that the Keshi, I'll just read this, Keshi represents, this is the demoniac quality, that of course we understand that exists in us as individuals in the Kali Yuga. It's not just that we're the good people and the other people are all the bad people, but everybody has born with these demoniac tendencies in the Kali Yuga. Keshi represents the vanity of thinking. I am a great devotee and guru. Also the false ego arising from attachment from wealth and material accomplishments. So if we can kill this demon within ourselves, that's what we will achieve. We will become a humble devotee, and we will not be claiming proprietorship over anything in this material world. And we will not be proud of our accomplishments either. So, if these demoniac tendencies exist in us, they will, we know, be destroyed by the practice of devotional service. But there are pitfalls to be experienced in that process if we are not vigilant. And if we look to the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, in the advice given by Kapila Muni to his mother, Devahuti, there is information there about some of these pitfalls and what will happen if we are not able to conquer this specific demon, what he represents. Thinking ourselves, for instance, advanced in knowledge. So how does this arise? There are three modes of material nature. There is the mode of goodness, in which we become progressively enlightened. There is the mode of passion, which is described as mediocre. No intelligent person likes mediocrity. If a job's worth doing, it's worth doing badly or goodly or very well. Mediocrity is not something that we should relish, especially in devotional life, because we want to achieve perfection. So that is the mode of passion. And in the mode of ignorance, what is that? That is just depravity. So the problem is, if a living entity remains under the influence of the modes of material nature, then eventually, sooner or later, he will become deluded. It is inevitable, because our process of devotional service is so potent that immediately we take it up, we come to the transcendental platform. So if we don't achieve that goal, if we remain in the modes of material nature, sooner or later we will be deluded. And part of that delusion, of course, is thinking that we are divinely inspired. We become proud of the knowledge that we have. And this is not based upon humbly requesting the mercy of Krishna, but upon our own accomplishments. We will not be operating on the basis of mercy, understanding that we are nimitra matram, that we are instruments of Krishna, but we will be thinking on the basis of my own accomplishments, what I know on the bodily platform of life. So under those circumstances, what can happen is that we feel, not only that we falsely feel divinely inspired, but we think that we are superior and that all others are inferior. And the result, of course, is the pride of knowledge. And that is one of the pitfalls. And also, of course, in spiritual life, we want to hear things that are conclusive, that come from Smriti and Shruti and Smriti. We do not want to be engaged in speculation. That is also a pitfall if we're not successful in actually becoming transcendentally conscious, that we may not clearly see the distinction between what is speculation and what is truth. It's not very difficult to fall into that trap, especially if we don't study the scriptures regularly, if we don't read regularly. Eventually we may end up speaking just what we can remember, what we think we know, by rote, even to the point of sometimes of cliche, where we repeat things which actually don't really mean anything to us anymore. We think there's some understanding, but it's just cliche. It's lost its meaning for us. So when we preach, for instance, it's very important that if we're answering questions or we're giving knowledge, that we re-reference the information that we provide from the Smriti and Shruti. Otherwise, what will our words be? The standard of etiquette is established in the material world by what? What is the standard of etiquette in the material world? What is it? What is the standard? How do people know whether they're acting properly or not? If we don't know this, how do we know what we're doing today? How do we know what we're going to do today, whether it's bona fide or not? You must know. You're just kidding me. I know you. I knew I was being set up. No. Not cultural mores, because that's the illusion.
Well, that's a problem.
Yes, okay. We'll say for the conditioned soul. Right, that is the standard. But that is not the real standard. That is the problem in modern society, as they have lost the standard of behavior. So now a lady wants to feel that she's the same as a man. And a young child can take the choice. He may be bewildered whether he's a boy or a girl. This is what happens when you lose the standard of social behavior. This is what happened in modern society. They have lost the standard of social behavior. And why is that? Where does that standard come from? Yes, Jai. From Shruti and Smriti. That's why it said Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidim Vina. That even devotional service that is not performed according to the Shruti and Smriti, what does it do? It simply causes a disturbance in society. So that's, you know, we have to take very serious this hearing and chanting of Hare Krishna to make sure that we don't fall into this trap of becoming falsely proud of what we know and thinking that we're okay, we're divinely inspired, whereas actually we're acting out of the mode of passion and we're not actually able to help anybody, and make sure that the answers that we know, that we give, are the answers that are coming from the scriptures, not that we want to fabricate. Not fabricate, not manufacture or create a solution or an answer, but the answer must come. That is why we we can speak with all honesty according to the level of our realization. So, you know, if we can travel for millions of years at the speed of the mind and still not know what is in the spiritual world or understand anything of it, we cannot presume to understand these things from the mundane platform, especially from the lower modes of material nature. So therefore it is important. These are some of the pitfalls that can befall us, as described by Kapila Muni, where he describes actually who is actually a devotee. Prabhupada says in the purport there that this person is a devotee. Now it's a perennial question, who is a devotee? We know in the broader sense that anybody who accepts Lord Vishnu as a devotee, even a worshipper of a demigod, if we want to go to the broadest spectrum of who is a devotee, but more precisely, if we want to hone in on that, we can reference Lord Kapila's instructions, and in the purport there, Srila Prabhupada says there are five things that a devotee accepts. If a person accepts these five things, then he is a devotee. It's very clear there. There are five things. Does anybody like to say what they might be? What they are? Five things. If you accept these five things, you are a devotee. Yes?
Five, six items of surrender.
Yes. Well, the first one is to serve a devotee. Serve a devotee. That means to accept a spiritual master. To chant Hare Krishna. Second thing, according to prescribed number of rounds. Then there is to do deity worship. Four is, what have we missed?
Read Shastra.
To hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes. And the fifth item, this we should want to do. Yes, live in a place where devotional service is practiced, and this is a very important point, without disturbance. Without disturbance. This is very important, because if the mind cannot be pacified, it's very difficult to perform devotional service. And it's very difficult to perform devotional service if we're hearing and chanting in an inconclusive way. We want to be clear about what it is we understand. We have to know the goal of life, and we have to know how to get there. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. We have to know these things. We start by Sambandha, understanding who we are. So it's not that when we come to knowledge that we will think that we know everything, but we will clearly understand that I know nothing but by the mercy of Krishna. I am fool number one. We will not become proud. To become proud of knowledge means that there is no... What? What are we missing when we become proud of our knowledge? We're missing the point of surrender. Surrender means, of course, to be dependent upon Krishna, and not to be dependent upon our own prowess, but to be fully surrendered to Krishna means to be fully dependent upon Krishna, to understand, just as the great acharyas do, that whatever they can speak is by Krishna's mercy. So that's why today we're only flying at an altitude of 2.5 inches. If I was more qualified, we would all be smiling by now and sitting up straight. But it doesn't always happen like that, because we have to become purified, we have to become proper receptacles for spiritual culture. So we need to kill this demon, Keshi, because, as Kapila says, that if you are too much attached to acquisition of wealth, if you are too attached to family, but even if you are not attached to improving your economic position in life, but you are too attached to family members, That is, precludes you from understanding this philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And also, even if you don't have those faults, if you have no interest in serving Krishna, if you have, say, for instance, no interest in chanting Hare Krishna, if we have given up seriously chanting Hare Krishna, then we cannot understand this philosophy. Even though we may think and we may speak Krishna Katha, it is not with understanding. And it is, at their level, it is not very helpful to anybody. So these things are there. And just as we heard read previous to the class, how we have to sometimes accept the medicine, but it's very painful sometimes. How to get rid of this false prestige of having material acquisitions, how to get out of the habit of speculating, how to see clearly when we are speculating and when we are not speculating. It's very important, because if you can't see the difference, what is going to be the result? You're going to be enveloped in sentimentalism. That's if we can't discriminate between what is actually speculative and what is real. We will be involved in an overload of sentimentalism, which of course is against Vaishnava principles, especially as founded by Rupa Goswami. So, we know what we have to do. It's just a matter of, do we want to do it? Do we believe? Do we want to achieve eternal happiness? This is a question. It's a very interesting question. Because if we really understood that, it's just like in the material world, if someone promises you now today, someone comes and says, I know where you can get a lot of money for nothing. You just have to go there and queue up and they'll give you a lot of money. You'd be very interested. You wouldn't miss it up, would you? We wouldn't miss that opportunity, I don't think, unless we're a little bit advanced. We might. But then, if we're advanced, we'd go and get that money and use it in Krishna service, wouldn't we? Anyway, the point is that why are we not determined to achieve eternal happiness? Why doesn't it appeal to us, except on a theoretical basis? Why aren't our daily our lives being changed in this pursuit of eternal happiness? Why isn't it our daily lives are not improving every day? Maybe they are for some of us, for others maybe not. But it should be that way, because spiritual life means unlimited, unrestricted happiness, ever-increasing happiness. So the reason is, of course, which is obvious to us all, is that we still have material attachments. We still put some value on material happiness. Param Dushvara Nivartate. So it's because we haven't got the highest happiness, we haven't experienced the higher happiness, then we're stuck with the lower thing. And that still satisfies us. And we don't take really seriously the fact that we should be actually aspiring for eternal happiness. Hare Krishna. So I welcome, please, any questions, or especially any corrections, if they can be done gently, please. Yes, bro.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
With this kind of class, I can formulate a lot of questions, but I'll just get to some more technical ones.
Please don't be too technical, please.
It's stated that the Lord is eternally present in Vrindavan. But at the same time, we find that For example, when he left for Mathura, there was serious lamentation by the gopis. And I've posed these questions to other speakers before, and then they came back and said, well, the Lord is present in Vrindavan, so really it was seemingly lamentation. But we find that when Uddhava went there, when Balaram went there, there was so much lamentation. How can you explain this?
See, this is the kind of question I would like to avoid, because it's very, maybe the answer is simple, but not to me. I mean, I state the fact that Krishna comes, he comes with all his expanses, but in his original form, he stays in Vrindavan, right? So when he goes outside of Vrindavan, he goes in another form, another expansion, one of his other expansions, which exists eternally. Krishna is one, but exists in many forms, unlimited forms, one entity, but existing in many forms. So Krishna can appear any place in any form that he desires. So your question is a little, it's not going to help me to properly understand that right now. But this is also another important aspect of devotional life, that we not only must give clear and conclusive answers according to Shruti and Smriti, but we also have a duty to ask questions which are relevant and which we are capable of understanding our level of devotional life. That's also very important for us. Otherwise, we'll all become very bewildered. I'm sorry, I haven't really taken seriously your question because it's a little too technical for me. I didn't really hear it, and I have to apologize, but maybe if someone has a simpler question, I can try and answer.
Krishna, very nice class, Prabhu. Thank you. Time, Krishna is time.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Time, I am. And in a spiritual world, there is no time.
Yes, so, there is time, but no effect of time.
Time, like every pastime, can be revisited at any time.
Yes.
In the spiritual world, they're existing eternally. The
yes.
rasas are
right.
being exchanged eternally.
Yes.
So, when Krishna comes, when it's Gokula, when in his visiting here, this planet, time, you know, is a factor. And
oh, he comes in the spiritual world. He's not subject to time,
right.
Yes.
But for the residents of Vrindavan, when they feel the separation, they were, you know, time is like is probably not affecting the pure devotees because they are living in a spiritual world. So, you know, all that lamentation that the gopis go through, it's just spiritual ecstasy.
Yes. That's right. That's what it is.
Comment.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
These five things that you mentioned, I see them written quite often in various places in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. I was curious if you could tell me where they're from.
Well, there are 64 things that are favorable for devotional service. I think they're the first five. It's in the Nectar of Instruction.
Nectar of Devotion, but also,
devotion.
Also in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila.
Yes.
Sadhu Sangha Nam Kirtan Bhagavat Shravan. That verse, I think yes. you were talking about.
Thank you. And of course, in the third canto, Lord Kapila's instructions. Prabhupada mentions it in the purport very clearly. Yes, Guru.
Another comment. So, this is easy.
I love what you said. I mean, you know, our reference should be based on the Smriti and the Shruti, or the scriptures.
Yes.
It's very important, fundamental, you know? Because, like one day Maharaji asked me, Prabhu, out a man and a woman, she acts like this, right? Who is on a higher platform? You know, she was asking me like this, and I was astonished when she asked that question because you know, it's seemingly obvious, but at the same time, the way she asked it, I realized that maybe she didn't have any clue. But like there are references, like in the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam and so forth, about these kinds of things. And
yes.
And it's important that we know these things. Otherwise, we act so much on the bodily platform, on the bodily concept, and it creates so much havoc in society.
When we realize...
So much havoc in society. Yes. Just because of petty things like this.
Yes. Yeah, when we really come to take devotional life seriously, we realize sometimes we have clear understanding, we're just touching the tip of, just to use a metaphor, of the iceberg, that really... There is so much information there in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. We haven't even begun to assimilate it. Not even begun. This is a problem with pride. I come back to the same thing we have. We think we know so much. We have pride in our own understanding. We think we're devotees. That is one of the, you know, that's the demoniac tendency that Keshi represents, that we're proud of our devotion. Proud of what we know. In reality, what do we know? You can stump me now by unlimited questions. I would be lost. I mean, I could go and sleep a little while and try and find out from the books what the answer is. But do we know the answers? Or will we be sitting here trying to give you an answer and we don't even know what the question is? Sometimes I find myself answering questions I haven't even understood the question is. I'm trying to answer it. You have to understand that we're living a pretty bewildered existence. You know, this is what happens when you get knowledge. You start smiling. When you understand something, you become happy. And when you don't understand it, you sit there. Like a vegetable. Vegetables can't have transcendental knowledge. But we sit like vegetables because we don't have any realization. Jai. Thank you. All glory to you, Prabhupada.